The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
And it goes down smooth.
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to think of decriminalizing our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents... Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, tokers and tokettes. It is Wednesday, May 18th, 2011, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to Hump Day. We're halfway through the week and rolling on toward Memorial Day and the official starts of summer for everyone. We hope you're having a good time. We got plenty of stuff to get to today. Let's start it off by introducing my good friend and the engineer, keeping everything together here, Ganja John.
What's up, Russ?
Ganja John had just crawled into work today.
I did.
On his belly like a snake.
Yes, down the stairs. It was quite frightening, actually. There's concrete at the bottom.
But, yeah, we're glad you're here.
Yeah, I'm doing okay.
Hope you make it. We also have to welcome to our show the lovely and talented Cannabis Carrie in Grastoria, Oregon.
Hello. I'm feeling fantastic. I'll feel good enough for me and Ganja John.
There we go.
All right.
And how was your acoustic brunch today?
Oh, it was good. I did 2 hours of volcano music, and man, 31 years ago today, Mount St. Helens blew here in the northwest, and I probably had 20 calls today of people calling me to tell me their version of what happened that day to them. It was a great show, so thanks for asking.
Yeah, I remember when St. Helens blew up. Of course, we were in school back then in Idaho, and even as far as Boise, we were getting ash. You know, I could remember everybody remarking about that. And of course, Carrie does this acoustic brunch show. You got to check it out every Wednesdays at coastradio.org. What is it, 10 a.m. Pacific, Carrie?
10:06 to noon.
Oh, well, let's get precise. Okay.
You know, it's radio. We've got a few minutes of world headlines before I come on.
Well, speaking of headlines, Carrie brings us our headlines for our show right after this first break, which is a little after 6 after the hour, probably 7 after. What do we got in the headlines today, Carrie?
Well, today we've got another employee case that I wanted. I just couldn't resist. Another medical marijuana patient employee case that I want to tell you about. Also, an activist that is very well known pleads guilty. We want to tell you about that. An alert from Paul Armontano about a New York bill, and also a case in Montana that I think you'll be interested in as well.
All right. We'll check that out from Big Sky Country right after this first break. Also on today's show, it's Irie Wednesday. We get some great music from Natalie and Grateful Dread Public Media, Public Radio. They are going to bring a song called Ganja Wise from Yuya. And then at 5:30, we speak with Dr. Mitch Earlywine like we do every Wednesday. And we take your live questions in chat or through our call-in line at 971-533-7111. You can ask Dr. Mitch questions on health, science, the studies, the history, the culture of marijuana, anything you want to know. We'll get it asked and answered right here on our Cannabis Science segment. And then, at the end of the show, a little radical ranting, more on Supreme Court decisions versus marijuana in the wake of yesterday's Kentucky v. King. We're right back after this.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the Marijuana Nation.
In today's busy world, we're inundated by advertising for all types of pharmaceuticals that come with a laundry list of potential side effects. Shouldn't you have better medical choices? Natural alternatives to pills pushed by Big Pharma? At Alternative Medical Choices, you could choose natural, safe, and effective alternative therapies that are right for your budget without nasty side effects. Cannabis, or marijuana, has been a legal medicine in the Pacific Northwest since 1998. Our doctors will help determine your qualifications for a medical marijuana recommendation in Oregon, no matter where you live. Our massage therapist will ease your aches and stress with soothing hemp seed oil or cannabis-infused massage salves. We also offer acupuncture, Reiki, and other alternative health therapies. Call Alternative Medical Choices in Portland, Oregon at 503-288-5579 or visit our website at www.altmedchoices.com. We specialize in out-of-state recommendations. That's www.altmedchoices.com or call 503-288-5579.
As High Times Senior Cultivation Editor, I'm often called into the field and asked to sample or even identify exotic strains of marijuana in their natural habitat. Now, for the first time, I've compiled more than 120 of my favorite strains into this single field guide designed to fit into your pocket as you travel the world in search of your favorite plant. From a friend's closet grow room to the wilds of Northern California, this single guide covers all of today's best-known strains, plus heirlooms and throwbacks, including High Times quality photos and information on each variety's genetic heritage and growing characteristics, plus my personal notes on aroma, flavor, and potency. So this is Danny Danko, author of the official High Times Field Guide to Marijuana Strains, wishing you good times and great ganja.
The official High Times Field Guide to Marijuana Strains is available at hightimes.com and finer bookstores.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carry.
And we've covered many stories of medical marijuana patients being fired from employment for legally using cannabis, but here's just one more story I couldn't resist. Paul Curry is a medical marijuana patient in the state of Colorado. He's worked for the last 7 years at Miller Coors Beer Company. He has been using cannabis to treat a health issue for about a year now, and with one single random UA that tested positive for THC metabolites, his employment was over with one very quick conversation. They came to his workstation with security and told him to empty his locker and go home. Rob Corey, a champion lawyer for medical marijuana patients, writes, has taken on the case of Mr. Curry. He told media yesterday, quote, all he had was one single positive UA for THC, which means that he had used marijuana in the last 30 days. That's all that it means, unquote. Corey insists that the Miller Coors maintenance mechanic was not high in any way at the time of his test, and his usage was never a factor in his job performance. Yesterday, Curry, along with his lawyer, Rob Corey, went to the Colorado Department of Labor and Employment in an effort to secure Curry his unemployment benefits. He had previously been denied the benefits because of the nature of his dismissal. They hope a more positive decision will come in a few weeks, but they might have a hard time securing Mr. Curry's benefits. Last year, the Colorado Industrial Claims Appeals Office issued an opinion that denied unemployment benefits to an unnamed person who was fired after testing positive for marijuana. According to employment attorney Emily Hobbs Wright, quote, when the Department of Labor issued that opinion, it decided to take a position on the issue. She also added that it is definitely a risk if you choose to use medical marijuana when it comes to employment. In Colorado, their marijuana program that has is an actual constitutional amendment, Amendment 20, it does include some language that has been problematic for Colorado medical marijuana patients. It reads, quote, nothing in this section shall require any employer to accommodate the medical use of marijuana in any workplace. Now, that has been interpreted by employers in the state that employees risk termination if they test positive for marijuana metabolites while employed, even if it is presumed that they were never under the influence of marijuana at the time of the test. A legal analyst for Denver Local 9 News says that with the number of people registered in the medical marijuana program, and I looked it up, currently there's estimated to be about 124,000 people, that this issue will be a hotbed of litigation for years to come. Sounds like a pretty safe bet.
Yeah, this is pretty shocking here. And I know up until recently, I spoke with some people who live in the area, and they told me that up until recently, the employee policy there at Miller Coors and other breweries was that they could have a brew while they were on shift. at break. Now, I don't believe they have that anymore, and I don't know how long ago it was they ceased that policy. But, boy, it's a little bit of the pot calling the kettle black, if you want to pardon a pun and spare a metaphor there, with a brewery company giving someone hassle over their private off-hours use of medical marijuana. I don't think when the people of Colorado or voters anywhere approved these medical marijuana laws that they were intending to make it so you had to choose between your health and your employment. We don't require that of any other drug that we prescribe to people for health reasons, but marijuana. Nobody's saying that the person who works at Miller Coors can't have an OxyContin prescription or a Vicodin prescription or an Ambien or any other number of, you know, antihistamines or antidepressants or opioid painkillers that can cause a great amount of impairment. And here we want to single out people for their use of medical marijuana. It once again illustrates, as we say day after day, illustrates the absurdity of trying to separate so-called patients from so-called criminals. There is no crime in the use of marijuana. So long as this guy wasn't high at work, wasn't trying to use at work, there's no reason to be discriminating against him. And it's time that we change these laws and recognize the right to work for people that use cannabis.
Paul Stanford, the 50-year-old founder of the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation that owns and operates medical clinics specializing in medical marijuana recommendations, has pleaded guilty to a reduced tax evasion charges today. Mr. Stanford was charged in March with failing to file personal income taxes in 2008 and again in 2009. Oregon's Attorney General John Kroger told him in court, quote, paying taxes is not optional. Stanford had asserted that he would be cleared of any guilt, but he told the Associated Press today that he instead took a sweetheart deal from prosecutors and accepted a misdemeanor charge of personal income tax evasion. His sentence will be 18 months of probation and an additional 160 hours of community service. His organization that he founded back in 1999 now has offices in 9 of the medical marijuana states, and his organization has helped more than 100,000 patients obtain state recommendations, permits, or cards for medical marijuana use. It lost its federal tax-exempt status back in 2010. And we are glad that he won't be spending any time behind bars.
Oh, absolutely. One thing that's troubling, though, is that Paul Stanford's also the chief petitioner behind the Oregon Cannabis Tax Act. And, you know, it's one of these situations where you deal with people in this movement all the time. And, you know, there's some people that have, you know, bad intent, or they're a little shady or whatever it might be. And I don't count Paul Stanford among those people at all. He's a genuine person. He's a wonderful guy. And he really has his heart in the right place about legalizing marijuana and ending adult marijuana prohibition. But you gotta keep these things in control. As a leader in this movement, as someone who's going to be representing and being a large target for the Department of Justice and the Oregon Department of Revenue and all these other organizations that want to oppose, take down, and restrict medical marijuana or marijuana legalization, you gotta try to keep yourself as spotless, as clean as possible. And doing something just like not filing taxes for 08 and 09, that's way too easy. And as far as a sweetheart deal goes, yeah, maybe the sweetheart deal was, you know, you can take this deal or we've got a hell of a case to put you behind bars. Maybe there wasn't a whole lot of choice as to taking the deal. I do hope the best for Paul Stanford. We don't want to see anybody in our movement be taken down, but I hope people take this as a lesson, especially if you're going to be a high profile activist, that you need to be better than. You got to cross all the T's and dot all the I's and make sure that you're obeying as many of the laws as you can. I know there's some of them we're not obeying, right? But you got to obey as many of the laws as you can, and don't make yourself an easier target.
Now, we've been covering this story for years, as long as we've been doing the stash. The shame that one of our country's first cities to decriminalize the possession of marijuana has now become the marijuana arrest capital of the world. We're talking about New York City here. An alert from Paul Armentano that the state Senate and assembly lawmakers have introduced bipartisan legislation, Senate Bill 5187 and Assembly Bill 7620, that seeks to reduce marijuana penalties and arrest violations involving cases where marijuana was either consumed or allegedly possessed in public. Under present law, non-public possession of up to 25 grams of marijuana is a non-criminal civil citation, punishable by just a $100 fine. However, in recent years, police, particularly in New York City, have misused Penal Law 221.10 to arrest defendants who would have otherwise faced no more than a civil citation. In New York City, just last year, law enforcement spent $75 million arresting approximately 50,000 minor marijuana offenders under Penal Law 221.10. Yet according to an April investigation by New York City public radio station WNYC, police routinely conduct warrantless stop and frisk searches of civilians, find marijuana hidden on their persons, and then falsely charge them with possessing pot open to public view. Now, passage of Senate Bill 5187 and Assembly Bill 7620 would save taxpayer dollars, protect citizens against illegal searches, and reduce unwarranted racial disparities in arrests by clarifying the law and standardizing penalties for marijuana possession offenses. If you would like to know how to contact your state senator or member of assembly in New York to support these measures, please bring your zip code and visit our page at stash.normal.org.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what this is with the news. It must be Paul Day. We had Paul Curry, Paul Stanford, now an alert from Paul Armentano. Paul is not dead, apparently. There's going to be a great video we're going to show in hour two during our live hour Toker Talk Radio, Paul Armentano on driving and DUID, so stay tuned for that. And also wanted to make note of the ACLU, former director of the ACLU, Ira Glasser, has issued a new brief on the constitutional standards for stop and frisk, and they refer to these New York Police Department arrests, saying that the hundreds of thousands of frisks that they do, most of them are illegal. 50,000 marijuana arrests in New York City. 86% of those arrested are black and Latino. Of those arrests in New York City, one out of seven arrests in New York City is for marijuana. And here's the problem with the stop and frisk, as Ira Glasser notes, is that they have the legal right to do a pat down frisk when an officer has a reasonable suspicion based on specific facts, not just a hunch, that the individual stopped is armed and dangerous. But somewhere between 99.75% and 99.9% of the frisks in New York City do not produce guns. If the law permits frisks only when the police reasonably suspect a concealed weapon based on the facts, how can virtually 100% of all frisks turn up no weapon? How reasonable is it for them to have believed there was a weapon when nobody's turning up with one? In addition to this, and Kerry pointed it out, a lot of these frisks are turning up marijuana, which again, under 25 grams is decriminalized to possess in your pocket. But they'll oftentimes falsely charge this individual with having it in public view. And the district attorney in the Bronx alone is throwing out 10 to 15 cases a day because they were charging him with public view when really it was in someone's bag or in someone's pocket. And furthermore, they'll say, hey, empty out your pocket or empty out your bag. And most people don't know that you can say no to that. You can say, no, I do not consent to any searches. So people say, oh, the cop said, empty your bag. They open the bag. They put the pot out on the hood of the car. There you go. That's public view, and the people get arrested for this. Check this stuff out. It's at the Drug Policy Alliance's site, drugpolicy.org, and it's the new issue brief by Ira Glasser, former head of the ACLU, outlining the constitutional standards for stop and frisk.
And a Montana man will spend 2 years in prison for sharing just 3 grams of his medical marijuana with his friends last November. District Judge Dusty Deschamps called Matthew Otto's offense Mickey Mouse, but still sentenced him to 20 years following a jury decision that found him guilty of one count of criminal distribution of dangerous drugs. 2 years of that sentence will be served at the Montana State Prison, and the remaining 18 years of his sentence will be suspended, although he will remain under the Department of Corrections supervision on probation. Judge Deschamps said that he took the 20-year-old man's criminal history as justification for the harsh sentence. Matthew Otto will not be allowed to use medical marijuana during his probation, and he must earn his GED within 1 year as part of his probation condition. Otto, who has a current medical marijuana card in Montana, had 3 grams of marijuana last November when he passed a pipe to 2 passengers while driving down a street. An off-duty Missoula County Sheriff detective saw the exchange and reported the incident. Deputy County Attorney Andrew Paul had recommended 5 years in prison for Otto, calling him a persistent felony offender. He has over 20 juvenile convictions and a theft and parole violation conviction as an adult. When addressing the judge yesterday, Otto told him that he was in the middle of rethinking his, quote, big giant piece of crap life, unquote, and that he may need medication for mental health problems. He asked the judge for just one more chance to get it right, and the judge said he granted that request by reducing his 5 years in prison to 2, but he told him very sternly that if he ever landed in court again, that he would spend the entire 20 years in a state prison.
Wow. This is hard to believe this is America, huh? 20 years. Now, not only is doing the 2 years in prison, the 18 years on probation, this means 20 years without medical marijuana, 20 years without his medicine. Can you imagine sentencing someone to say for 20 years you can't take an aspirin, or for 20 years you can't use ibuprofen, or for 20 years you can't get any prescription antibiotics? Why in the hell are judges sentencing people to use or not use medicine? Why? Because once again, some people that use it are criminals, and some people that use it are patients. And that's what this case came down to, a patient passing a pipe to a criminal. And for some reason, in the act of that pipe leaving one man's hand and turning up in another man's hand, the marijuana in there went from medicine to deadly, dangerous Schedule I drug. It's absurd. Legalize now.
Hey, Russ, what do you think about a nap?
Yeah, a nap?
Yeah.
Yeah, really. An extended break. Hey, we'll be right back with some Yuya Ganja Wise in Irie Wednesday's Daily Toker Tunes.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man, reefer man? If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
West Vienna, Malgo, broke down barrier. Herb is medicine to broke down barrier. Boost the economy and broke down barrier. It's helping other states, broke down barrier. Cannabis for legalized to broke down barrier. Join and speak your voice, broke down barrier. We gonna change the law, broke down barrier. We got to educate, broke down barrier. Yeah, this is Nayora, you know, bigging up USVI normal. Working to legalize cannabis, you know, for the whole of the Virgin Islands.
USVI Normal is a non-profit organization working to legalize cannabis for the use by the industries and responsible adults. Do your part. Join USVI Normal. Register to vote. Pass the word. Voice your opinion. You can change the law. Contact us for more information at 340-244-9179. You can also visit our website at www.usvinorml.org.
It's time for your Daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Today we get tunes for Irie Wednesday, our celebration of that mellow vibe we find in the best of reggae, ska, calypso, and Latin music. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
All right, this is music from Grateful Dread Public Radio at GDPR on Twitter. It's Yuya with Ganja Wise.
Of the means of production equals the detoxification, biospheric regeneration of the global economy, brought to the table by none other than she. That is the root that she bear. Yeah, that is the fruit that she bear. And she gone ganja wise, ganja wise, gone ganja wise. Ganja wise, gone ganja wise. Ganja survive, gone ganja wise. Ganja alive, ganja gonna win through thick and thin. Ganja gonna win, ain't never been a sin. Gone ganja wise, ganja alive, yeah. Let's bring an end
to the deforestation. Let's call a halt to the global destruction. Time to start up a new restoration. Time to live together in damnation. When we ganja wise, ganja wise, ganja wise, ganja wise, ganja wise, ganja survive, ganja wise, ganja alive, ganja gonna win through thick and thin. Ganja gonna win, ain't never been a sin. Ganja wise, ganja alive, yeah. Joseph Jai like a Rasta Joe. Used to be Joe College if you really must know. Jai love make I smile, Jai herb make I grow. Listen to Jai music, I and I do know. The solarization of the means of production equals the detoxification. Biospheric regeneration of the global economy. Brought to the table by none other than she. Yeah, that is the root that she bears. That is the fruit that she bears. And she gone ganja wise, ganja wise, gone ganja wise, ganja wise, gone ganja wise, ganja survive, gone ganja wise, ganja alive, ganja gonna win through thick and thin. Ganja gonna win, ain't never been a sin. Gone ganja wise. Ganja alive, yeah. Gang ganja wise, ganja wise, gang ganja wise, ganja wise, gang ganja wise, ganja wise, gang ganja wise, ganja wise.
You want a copy of that song for your iPod? Check out the Daily Toker Tunes at the Stash blog by surfing to stash.normal.org and choosing Media and then Toker Tunes from the main menu.
Hey, other announcements here as we're speaking of IRE Wednesday. We want to let you know about the Hempstead World Music Festival that will be taking place up here in, all over Oregon. Let's see, if you check it out, it's Toots and the Maytals, Dubtronic Crew, Nikki Davis, John Trudell and Bad Dog, Rhythm Culture, and you can find out more information at this at HempsteadWorldMusicFestival.com. On July 2nd, they'll be at the Lane Events Center in Eugene, Oregon. On July 3rd, at the Deschutes County Fairgrounds in Bend, Oregon, and the 4th of July at the Washington Park Rose Garden Amphitheater right here in Portland, Oregon. The tickets are out there through ticketsoregon.com, or you can go to Music Millennium here in Portland. Doors open at 3. Show is at 4:20. Of course, there are vendor spaces available. You can call 503-636-0336 for information or email info at HempsteadWorldMusicFestival.com. It's the Hempstead World Music Festival 2011, Eugene, Redmond and Portland, Oregon, all benefiting the Oregon Cannabis Tax Act, so you can go listen to some great reggae music and help to legalize marijuana in the state of Oregon. We're right back with Dr. Mitch after this.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
This is Normal Show Live.
We're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana, and the next thing you know, they got 10 years. They've got mandatory sentences, and these judges say, they throw up their hands and say, there's nothing we can do, there's mandatory sentences. We've got to take a look at what we're considering crimes.
When the Reverend Pat Robertson from television's The 700 Club...
criminalizing marijuana, criminalizing the possession of a few ounces of pot and that kind of thing, I mean, it's just...
makes more sense on the marijuana issue than the President, the Congress, and the Supreme Court.
It's costing us a fortune, and it's ruining young people. The young people go into prisons, they come out, they go in as youths, and they come out as hardened criminals, and it's not a good thing.
You know we're winning.
Yo, what's good? This is Be Real of Cypress Hill chilling on Normal Show Live. Legalize it.
It's time for Normal Show Live's Cannabis Science with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York in Albany and the author of Understanding Marijuana. Now, here's your dose of cannabis science.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the middle of the week. We always visit with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. It's great to have you back, Doctor. How you doing?
Always a pleasure and great to be here.
You know, that sun is coming out, and we can, out here at least in the Pacific Northwest, we can get out from underneath our sun lamps and actually enjoy the real thing. I hope you're having good weather up there.
Even in Albany, we see the sun once in a while.
Oh, that's a good thing. We always start off this segment by giving you a chance to let us know if there's new studies, new data on marijuana that we need to know about. Anything new?
I actually just took a closer look at those ADHD and cannabis data that a lot of folks from Normal participated in, and we are getting some neat effects on the attention aspect, but not so much on the hyperactive aspect other than the standard, when I'm coming down, I'm ready to go to sleep. So sounds like folks who really do have attention issues, there must be some strains out there that are really helping them. But as far as being hyperactive, it's probably pretty much the same for everybody and just going to help you sleep, but not really help you maintain hyperactivity in a way that might help you, say, at work. Mm,
all right. Hey, I want to remind everyone that we take the live questions right now for Dr. Mitch Earlywine. You can get him in through the chat. Just put question at the beginning of them. That helps Carrie pick them out. Or you can call in your question at 971-533-7111. I want to get things started here by taking us away from science class and maybe over to history and anthropology class. And, you know, we've talked about the history of cannabis use going back to the Emperor Shaneng in China, and we talk about these ancient uses of cannabis. When we look at aboriginal peoples, you know, from Australia or the native tribes that exist, say, in the Amazon, do we still have any aboriginal peoples out there, and what are their uses of cannabis? Is there any recording of that?
So it's curious because there are parts of, say, Western Africa that even today aren't really heavily industrialized, in part because those governments have done things to protect those people from essentially outside influence. And they have some interesting history with the plant, the Daga culture, as they are known, and they've done things like make pipes out of mud, of course, and then actually do a thing where they build a big pipe basically out of the entire earth, where there's just a sort of bowl and then a big line with a drill through literally the hole in the earth right there, and smoke out of the whole earth as their bong, if you will, which I find just an incredibly delightful idea. And they have rituals like you would imagine, where, what a surprise, the plant is paired with a lot of dancing and then eating and then sleeping.
You know, we look back through cultures and we see a lot of them using not just cannabis, but other entheogens, you know, mushrooms and other hallucinogens and such for religious uses in their, you know, their early developments. Throughout cultures, and not just speaking of marijuana, but when does it become something that is controlled by ritual and taboo into something that's controlled by laws and arresting? Is there a specific thing that happens in a culture that turns drugs into something that was a religious thing and now it's a criminal thing?
It's interesting because not with cannabis, but drugs more generally, there are people who want to wreck people's buzz that go all the way back to ancient times. It's really hilarious, but there were sanctions against caffeine at least by the 1400s. There was a Russian czar who would slit your nostrils if he caught you smoking tobacco. I mean, it's really, really nuts how there's always somebody who wants to make sure nobody else is having any fun.
Oh, man. And here we call them Republicans. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. All right, let's go to our chat room here and get some questions. Herbal Supplement is asking, Dr. Mitch, what does the scientific literature say about medical cannabis and Raynaud's disease?
It's interesting because the Raynaud's symptoms have a lot of variance across different folks and often co-vary with some of the colitis type or, you know, internal gut type symptoms. It looks like it's, you know, certainly helpful for the gastrointestinal aspects, but that peripheral blood flow component, it doesn't make sense pharmacologically that it would be a huge help. Generally, any of our smoked stimulant type medications don't encourage opening of the capillaries in the extremities, and cannabis is in many ways that same situation. So it wouldn't be necessarily outrageously detrimental, but it's certainly not going to be a big help as far as those symptoms are concerned.
And from context, I get that this is a gastrointestinal disease. How does it differ from something like, say, Crohn's? What is Raynaud's disease?
Essentially, the aspect that's correlated with that, but that has to do with peripheral blood flow being restrained. So you don't see blood getting out to the extremities and the hands and the feet in the same way. So you see these folks develop skin problems, particularly in the winter. They're hypersensitive to cold and things like that.
Okay. We have an anonymous question who says, I was honest with my doctor about my marijuana use, and now he says I have an addiction. I am obviously not going to return to him, but do you have any advice for cannabis users communicating with their doctors? I'm afraid he put addict in my medical records, but I'm afraid to ask him anything else.
I know this sounds self-serving, but this is what I do with the physicians around here, is I always walked in with my book under my arm. So if you've got a book with a big five leafer under your arm and they don't say anything about it, that may not be your physician. If they do say, ooh, gee, what do you got there? That looks interesting. That's probably your man.
Okay. A question from Captain Keel Hall here wants to know, how toxic is my cat's hair that he keeps shedding in my stash?
Alas, it's potentially really bad, yeah. Particularly if you're at all immunosuppressed or even just you know, within the normal ranges of immune function but prone to colds. And, man, that stuff really smells when it burns. So yeah. By all means, do everything you can. I find if you have a little bag of catnip that the cat can play with, they're much less interested in your stash.
There we go. We are taking your calls at 971-533-7111 if you've got a question for Dr. Mitch Earlywine, or you can get it asked via our chat room. And let's see, in our chat room, this is good news here because we do have the Rio question of the week. Our regular listener stereotype always comes up with some great questions. And here it is, our Rio question of the week. Does anything else in the body mimic or draw parallels to the cannabinoid system?
Oh, absolutely. So we've got basically 2-AG, as it's called, which is an endogenous cannabinoid. And that's one that functions in a sense much more strongly than THC, but for a shorter duration. And then the endocannabinoid system seems to have some other components, again, with names that don't really lend themselves to easy pronunciation. And they're very much involved in the immune function and, what a surprise, in memory and in pain.
Okay. We've got a two-part question here from Stazep, I think is the name. Is it true cannabis fights cancer cells?
So we now have pretty compelling data in the Petri dish in laboratory experiments that at least THC and other cannabinoids can decrease tumor growth. We also have those, you know, really prominent case studies where individuals with tumors did see decrease in size. It was only an N of 2, but that's the kind of compelling evidence that got aspirin started, for example. So I'm really optimistic about this.
Okay. And the second part of the question is it true that it would take a third of your body weight of marijuana to kill you?
Well, it depends on how it's ingested, of course. A lot of cannabis has lost the side stream smoke in the smoked domain, but essentially I feel like that 2-pound range would be potentially enough to reach lethality for a subset of the population. And as my undergraduates say, if you've got 2 pounds and smoke it by yourself, you deserve to die.
You know, and we were talking about this the other day about how when, you know, Judge Francis Young with the DEA mentioned that, you know, marijuana was so unlethal that it would take 150 pounds, you know, whatever the number was, 1,500 pounds to kill a 150-pound man. But we got to thinking that, you know, this was back in the day. This was before making, you know, the hash oils and the concentrates that we have now and so on. So if we were talking about someone using, say, a very potent tincture or eating hash directly, any estimates there on what would be lethal?
About 125 milligrams of THC per kilogram of body weight is going to put you in the rough range. But again, we're talking about a hell of a lot. Even if you had, you know, a strain that was 30% THC, we're still talking a hell of a lot of pot.
I'm around like 275 pounds, and I did 4,000 milligrams of hash when we were in Denver, and it didn't kill me, so... If you want to take 4,000 grams, it'll put you to sleep. I'll tell you that, right? Milligrams, right? It'll put you to sleep.
Yeah, don't make any plans.
You'll fall asleep well before you die.
There we go. We have a call coming in here from 808 area code, which I believe is Hawaii. What's your question for Dr. Mitch Earlywine?
Yes, does the cannabinoids and the THC that pass to pass through the liver, does it do anything for the cirrhosis?
As it turns out, it doesn't help cirrhosis directly, but we do have data suggesting it helps people tolerate other cirrhosis medications better. So a lot of the medications that people take for cirrhosis are extremely nauseating, and cannabis can certainly take the edge off that, make them more likely to take the medications that they need and help in the long run.
All right. And I saw the latest medical marijuana state, Delaware, will register people who have cirrhosis. So that's a good question. I was wondering about that myself. All right. We got a time for a few more questions here. But remember, if you don't get your question in on today's show, you can always call back or chat with us next week. We do this every Wednesday. Or send your question by email directly to Dr. Mitch Earlywine by emailing 420research@gmail.com. That's 420research@gmail.com. Our next question from Mountain Lover is, have you heard of the cannabinoid CBDV? I've heard it can help bone growth. Could this be a good treatment for bone disorders?
I have heard of it. I know that there's some, at least two labs that are busy synthesizing it and trying it. I haven't seen data where it will actually help bone growth. Pharmacologically, that's a tough one to guess, in part because of the predictors of, you know, what makes bone cells multiply. So I will check that literature and get back to folks next week.
All right. And remember, folks, CBDV is a cannabinoid. CBGB is a nightclub. Our next question from Trickster Phillips wants to know, is cannabis native to the Americas? And if not, who brought it over?
It looks like cannabis probably started in what is now Taiwan. It spread essentially over through standard trade routes of spices and things through, say, India, the Middle East there, and then up across in Africa. Basically, when Napoleon went down there to, you know, rape and pillage, he brought it up to European countries. There were also some British physicians who went down to India to investigate it and then went over to the colonies to basically grow hemp in order to, you know, have all its industrial uses. And then the medical aspects of the more THC-laden strains sort of developed there. So I would say, you know, the early settlers, basically, before the United States was the United States, would get credit for bringing it over.
Is there any evidence to suggest that that cannabis had high potency values, was used as medicine for its psychoactive properties before mankind started selective breeding for that property?
We do find that basically it's not that mankind wasn't interested, it's that we really didn't have the plant husbandry knowledge, if you will. So people were definitely using it psychoactively even in Herodotus's time, but the secret of what made a good plant was still kind of elusive, so there was a lot of variation in strains. People would use it one time and it would be great, the next time it wouldn't. And that was, in some ways, part of why it didn't get more popular more quickly.
Okay. A question now from Randy1971, who wants to know, what causes certain strains to be creepers That is, the ones that creep up on you with the high versus the ones that instantly get you high?
There are a couple of hypotheses about these, but as you can imagine, funding for lab research on that topic is incredibly limited. The National Institute on Drug Abuse is not so interested in creepers. The hypotheses I've heard tend to have to do with dosage in the first place, state of the gut. So if you're already full, does that seem to have an impact? And then just general arousal and time of day. So if you're already late in the day, a little bit sedated and things like that, you may notice effects more rapidly. If it's earlier in the day, you've got a full stomach, you're pretty energetic, you might not notice quite as quickly. And then, of course, high dose tends to not creep because it's just such a high dose. So all those variables need to be investigated, but it's really tough to get funding for that kind of work.
Well, we will put together an all-volunteer squad of researchers. I'm sure we can find the volunteers. I'm going to turn things over to Carrie here for a second, because she's got a great question up there in Grastoria.
I do.
The beneficial cannabinoids?
Oh, yeah. We talk about the beneficial cannabinoids that are in the marijuana, the kind that don't get you high but have health benefits. Do those get just completely ruined when you burn a bowl? Do you have to eat cannabis to get those health benefits without getting the high part?
As it turns out, if you could find a strain that was all, for example, cannabidiol and no THC, in theory, you could smoke it, preferably vaporized and probably at a lower temperature than you would normally do for THC, and you would get all those effects. The problem, of course, is that you can't, because it's not psychoactive, you wouldn't notice the effects. You wouldn't know how much to vaporize, essentially.
Okay. And our last question here comes from the Gypsy Enlightenment, who wants to know, have there been any strains that have been more proven to help asthmatics?
Unfortunately, we don't have a ton of data on individual strain differences because of the, you know, that NIDA basically embargo on multiple strain evidence. Some folks out at WAM have been trying to gather data on individual strains and different impacts, but actually, as far as I know, haven't looked at asthmatics. This is a thing where I feel like keeping doses low and doing multiple trials is the way to go. So by all means, word of mouth and asking your friends may be a way to start. If your dispensary has any recommendations, by all means, give them a try. But I'm afraid the scientific literature is just way behind on this.
All right. Well, we got to get this legalized so we can find out more truth about cannabis. And I want to thank you, Dr. Mitch Earlywine, for dispelling a lot of the myths and rumors and giving us the science behind this. Thanks a lot, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you, Russ.
It's tough talking to kids about marijuana, especially if you might be a parent who dabbled a time or two in your youth. So to help you out, get your copy of Dr. Mitch Earlywine's latest book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and an expert on the studies concerning marijuana, its effect on health and society, and the methodology behind the statistics. He is a frequent guest here on our daily audio stash. Dr. Earlywine lays it all out without the propaganda and scare tactics that parents know won't work with teenagers. He presents a rational understanding of cannabis, what it is and what it isn't, and why kids shouldn't be using marijuana. You can order today through Amazon.com or check our links at our blog, stash.normal.org.
When I was in England, I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it. And didn't inhale, and never tried it again.
I think you'd probably be a lot cooler if you had, Mr. President.
I said, hey, do you have a joint can? Sure would be a lot cooler if you did. Lie to don't hide it.
Lie to don't hide it.
Oh, lie to don't hide it.
Lie to don't hide it.
Just lie to don't hide it. Fire it up right now.
Been busted? Need a lawyer? Call the Normal Legal Committee for an attorney near you. Find one at norml.org. Remember, attorneys are cheaper than a lifelong criminal drug record.
It's that freedom. Freedom. I'm free to do whatever.
answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Hoo-ah! Radical rant.
Yesterday, we brought you the unfortunate news of the Supreme Court's decision in Kentucky v. King. For those of you who didn't catch the show yesterday, this 8-1 Supreme Court decision hinged on a case where police smelled marijuana coming from behind a door where they had no probable cause and no warrant, but they smelled marijuana coming from behind a door, knocked loudly, and then when they heard the sounds of the residents scurrying about, they presumed them to be destroying evidence and therefore burst down the door and went into the room and arrested all the people inside. And the Supreme Court upheld 8-1 that was perfectly legal. They didn't need a warrant. They didn't need any probable cause. The mere smell of marijuana was enough to let them know there was a crime going on, and the fact that people were making noises behind the door that the police say sounded like destroying evidence means that they were perfectly okay. It was an exigent circumstance for them to ignore the Fourth Amendment, break down the door, and burst into the man's home. And I wrote this up, and then Paul Armentano from Normal sent me a note and said, you know, you ought to write this up for the Normal front page. And so I did. And in doing so, he wanted me to add an addendum, because in my closing yesterday on the show, I mentioned how this Supreme Court is not the route to legalizing marijuana. Okay, so we get a lot of people that write to Normal and they say, you ought to sue. You know, you ought to sue because it's a lie. They're lying about marijuana. Yeah, we know they're lying about marijuana. You think we haven't tried that? You think in 40 years we haven't thought of every manner of lawsuit that could be done against the federal government? It's been tried. Normal versus DEA, Getman versus DEA, all sorts of suits out there. Great legal minds are working on this. But every decision so far has come down to the fact that the Supreme Court just says, hey, look, it's in the law. Law says marijuana is a deadly, dangerous drug. It's illegal. And all of our precedent says that police and the state have the duty to protect citizens and to stop lawbreaking. And, well, there you go. It's against the law and it's dangerous. So everything they did is perfectly legal. And this is going to continue to happen so long as that law exists. The route to legalization is through legislation, is through coming up with lobbying, with changing the laws, with repealing the laws, with reforming the laws, so that the courts can make the decisions that make sense, that make give us justice in this country. So I wanted to go back and look at some of these cases to give folks an idea of what I'm talking about, some of these precedents that have been set in America today. First of all, we go back to the Raich case. Raich v. Gonzalez is an important Supreme Court case. This is where Angel Raich was a patient suffering from brain cancer and a number of other problems, but mainly tumors and such. And she's in California, and she's following Proposition 215. She gets seeds from within California. She grows it in California soil using California shovels and California water and California pots and everything that she put together, the lights, the ballast, the place it was growing in, the fertilizers that were used, everything came from California and was being grown legally under California Prop 215 for her own personal medical use. And yet the Supreme Court said that this personal intrastate, non-commercial medical use of cannabis is controlled by interstate commerce. Yeah, what they did in that case is they looked back to a precedent set in the 1940s called Wickard v. Filburn, and in this case, what they decided, the Wickard case, had to do with wheat, had to do with a farmer who was growing wheat. Now, back in those days in World War II, they had wheat rationing. They were rationing a lot of things. Federal government set rations on the commercial production of wheat and who could get it, who could buy it. And this farmer grew his own wheat, saying, well, this isn't commercial wheat. This is my own personal wheat. This is personal wheat for my family and my livestock. And the Supreme Court said, no, wheat is fungible. If you grow your own wheat, you won't be buying the wheat off the commercial market. Therefore, you're affecting the commercial market. Therefore, it's interstate commerce. Therefore, we can ban your own personal growing of wheat. Well, that was used to ban the personal medical growing of marijuana under federal law in the Raich case. But again, it's a little bit different because in the case of wheat, we were talking about a legal crop being grown illegally. In this case, we were talking about an illegal crop being grown legally in the case of the Angel Raich case. So it's crazy that the Supreme Court will go through these tortured bits of pretzel logic to continue to maintain the prohibition of marijuana. Here's another case. Now, this isn't a Supreme Court case. This is through the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which stands until and unless the Supreme Court reviews it. It's the case of USA versus Juan Pineda Moreno. And in this case, this was an Oregon case. They suspected this man of growing marijuana, of operating outdoor clandestine grows. And so the police snuck onto his property without a warrant, no warrant, snuck onto his property, onto his driveway, and placed a GPS tracking device secretly on the guy's car. Never told him he's got the GPS. And then they tracked him using the GPS to all the different grow shops he went to and all the locations he went to grow his crops. And the U.S. Court of Appeals at the Ninth Circuit said, yes, that's perfectly okay. That's not a violation of unreasonable search and seizure. That's not government prying too much for them to sneak onto your driveway, onto your property, past your property line, onto your personal car, and attach a GPS device. Now, I can't imagine how we would explain to Thomas Jefferson and Ben Franklin the idea that the state should be allowed to come onto your property and install a government clerk who sits there 24 hours a day recording every location you ever went to. Because that's really what a GPS is, right? It's a government agent, in a sense, sitting there recording everywhere you go. That's perfectly legal in the name of eradicating cannabis. Another case, this was also, I think this was out of California perhaps, USA versus Somkit Thongsi. And he's a man who was growing marijuana out. He was attending a illegal marijuana grow out, I believe the California forests. And he had a pistol that he kept with him in his tent, you know, because he's out there in the middle of the wilderness guarding a pot grow. You can imagine the guy wants to, you know, defend himself, perhaps.
Bears.
Yeah, bears. There could be bears out there.
Bear guards.
Well, they ruled, the U.S., again, this is Ninth Circuit, ruled that merely possessing a gun while growing marijuana is a crime. Just having a gun. So no Second Amendment rights if you're growing pot. Another case, Frederick V. Morse. This is often known as the Bong Hits for Jesus case. This is a case where in Alaska, an 18-year-old high school student, yes, he was a high school student, but he was 18 years old. They went out in the city of Anchorage. There was a school field trip to the city streets to welcome the 2002 Olympic torch running through. And he and his friends held up a big old sign that said, Bong Hits for Jesus. He was on public property, on a city sidewalk, an 18-year-old man, and they ruled that the school could expel him. Even though it wasn't a school, it wasn't on school grounds or an official school activity, they ruled that the school could suspend him, expel him from school for expressing his First Amendment right to say bong hits for Jesus as a political statement. And again, because they said, well, you know, it was a school field trip, the teachers were there, therefore they could ban his First Amendment rights. Another case, Gonzalez v. O Centro Espírita Beneficiate União de Vegetal. That's a hard one to say. This has to do with religious use of cannabis. This case, the Centro Espírita case, ruled that certain Indian tribes, certain Brazilian Indians, people that recognized these certain tribal religions, could use Schedule I ayahuasca or Schedule I peyote in the case of certain Native American tribes. They could use these Schedule I very powerful hallucinogens as religious sacrament. They could prove that they were serious about their religion, that this had gone back for decades, for centuries, and they are allowed an exception to punishment under the Schedule I federal drug laws. But in another case called USA versus Quaintance, religions that use the Schedule I cannabis don't get that exception. And the logic behind the Supreme Court on that one is that the Indians who are using the hallucinogens don't pose any danger to stopping everyone else from using hallucinogens. That is, we can tell you're Indians, we can tell your religion is sincere, and not a whole lot of people do hallucinogens anyway. They're not that popular. But in the case of cannabis, oh my gosh, it's so popular that if we let your religion do it, then everybody who smokes pot will suddenly become religious, and we won't be able to stop the banning of pot. In essence, what the Supreme Court has said to religious cannabis users is tough luck. Your sacrament is too popular. That's the kind of tortured pretzel logic this Supreme Court will engage in to justify the government's right to destroy a plant species. And finally, the last case that I looked up here, Illinois versus Cabalas, a very important case, ruled that police who have stopped your vehicle can run a drug-sniffing dog around your car even if they have no probable cause to believe you have anything to do with drugs. We can run drug-sniffing dogs around your car just because. It can be just a standard operating procedure. We don't even have to believe you have committed any drug crime ever in your life. We can run drug-sniffing dogs around your vehicle. This is how destroyed our civil liberties have become, all in the name of trying to stop adults from using a safe, non-toxic herb for their own personal, religious, medical, or recreational uses. And this Constitution will continue to suffer until we end this prohibition. Prohibition is anathema to liberty. You can be drug-free, or you can be free, but you cannot be both. It is time to end the prohibition on marijuana for our country's sake, for our liberty's sake, in the name of our founding fathers.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
All right, for Cannabis Carry and Ganja John, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for listening to us. Stay tuned for Hour 2. We've got video from Paul Armentano. For those of you listening on the podcast, thanks for joining us. We'll be back tomorrow. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
You grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.